Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, your hostess and the voice for patient safety. Once again, I am happy to share this next hour with you as we work together to stay safe during every healthcare and hospital encounter. And the best way to survive it is to stay out of the system and pay attention to our health, our mind, bodies, and spirit way ahead of time. And this leads me to talk about the amazingly despicable behavior I have witnessed these past few weeks now that the presidential election is over. As we head into Thanksgiving week and the holiday season, people typically tend to soften as they think about family, giving, charity, and forgiveness. But from what I've seen, I think people have seriously lost their minds. And I just have to share a bit with you to see if it's just me or if you too have noticed some head-shaking behavior out there. Now, I have a Facebook page, not because I want it or like it, but because when you have a business, you're supposed to have a Facebook page. Yet anyone who is somewhat cognizant about what's going on in the real world knows that Facebook is strictly a privacy invasion tool. You post on and on about everything personal in your life, where you are dining, vacationing, who you are with, when you go to sleep, and on and on. And there it is, a perfect profile of you, available for anyone who wants to know. Now, I'm always shocked that people feel so compelled to put every minuscule thought they have on Facebook, and Twitter too, for that matter. Kids acting up? Put it on Facebook. Hate your job? Post it on Facebook. Eating a salami sandwich? Hey, take a picture and post it on Facebook. Driving in your car with a new haircut? Oh my, yes, everyone needs to know that. Share it on Facebook. Have diarrhea? Take a picture and post it on Facebook. But after the election, the information that people were openly sharing was downright nasty and, quite frankly, embarrassing. It was so bad that I had to quit looking. People whom I thought I respected were denigrating our country, saying they wished they didn't live here, that they were moving overseas, and when their family members responded to them, perhaps in disagreement, major feuds erupted with a son calling his father an a-hole, a mother calling her daughter an idiot, and others condoning rioting, violence, calling for killings. And it really made me wonder, what have we become that we cannot have a private thought with ourselves and leave it at that? What is going on with our society that forces us to display, proud as a peacock, every random and often ignorant thought we possess on a social platform for everyone to see? How can a person feel proud that they hate our country? Feel proud to call the president-elect an evil name? Proud to hope that the losing candidate die of a disease? So you're not happy with the outcome. Oh well, sometimes you win, and sometimes you lose. I mean, it's not like our democratic process just began with this election. This is how it works around here, people. Not everyone is a winner. And just because you don't like the outcome does not give you the right to suggest or participate in violence. Now, it really got bad on Facebook when someone posted how colleges around the country were canceling midterm exams because the poor kids couldn't cope with the election results. Schools were bringing in the therapy dogs for petting and calming sessions. And the two Facebook sides went at it. Those that thought that it was a perfectly acceptable approach to soothe the distraught students, and those who said, I'm at work today. How difficult is it to sit in an Ivy League classroom? And that leads to the question of entitlement and political correctness. Why does everyone have to be a winner? Kids can't play games in school anymore without everyone receiving a medal for participation. No one wins because everyone is a winner. Really? Is that life? Is that preparation for life? Sadly, we are not all winners. Not everyone can win. Did Chicago and Cleveland both win the World Series? Did Cleveland get a grand prize statue for participating? That's not how it works. Yet, we coddle and cuddle and spoon-feed and stroke college students. My gosh, they want to be considered adults. They have the right to vote. Yet when things don't go their way, cancel classes, call in the counselors, serve some comfort food, and heck, go ahead, kids, go outside and protest. Throw some rocks, burn the flag. You deserve it, honey, poor little fragile thing. You've been so wronged by that long-standing democratic election process that has been in place for years. But that doesn't matter. You're offended, and we must make sure you feel happy. I was in awe at the level of people I know, friends from college, friends from high school, colleagues, were stooping. And I also wondered, don't these people have something more important to do than rail on Trump and Clinton? It's over, people. Time to move on. Get a life. Go talk to your kids, or make dinner, or read a book, or sing a song. The negativity was stunning. And then there were real-life experiences that smacked me all week long. People were noticeably short-tempered and rude. And here is a fine example. I had been invited at least 6 months ago to speak to a group of retired teachers. It was scheduled for the day after the election. A few days prior to the event, I emailed the woman in charge to confirm the time and asked how many people would be in attendance. And she sent an email back with the location and the time. 12 noon for lunch, and I was to speak after that, and they were having turkey. No mention of how many people I could expect as I asked, but rather, turkey. Okay. Now, it was a good two-hour drive, and Bob and I arrived at the location, only to find that it was the wrong place. Apparently, the restaurant had two locations, and this gal sent me to the wrong one. So we drove around and around, trying to find the correct place. And luckily, thanks to Bob, we always leave early, so we were still on time. We entered the correct banquet center at 11:30 to find everyone sitting at tables, mostly through with lunch. The wrong place and the wrong time. Things didn't bode well, did they? I approached the reception table, and the woman standing there barked at me. Who are you? Whoa. I'm Pat Rulo. I'm the speaker today. She rebarked. Who are you? You're not speaking here. Is this the blankety-blank retired teachers group? Yes, it is, but who are you? And then she pointed to Bob with an irritated look and demanded, and who is he? Then she looked at the box of books we brought in with us and pointed to it and once again demanded, and what is that? To which I responded, you don't have to be rude. And before I could finish, she interrupted me. I've had a rough morning with the election and all. I shook my head and tried to keep my cool, and once again told her who I was, and I asked, don't you remember the several emails we've shared and the flyer I sent for you to distribute about this? Yes, but you cannot offer your books. We don't do that. And I didn't know that he was coming, and I didn't know that you needed a small table, so I don't know what to tell you. I guess you can eat if you want. And I said, Lulu, I'm not here for a free lunch. You and I had a telephone conversation about all of this, so I must say I'm really confused and quite offended, actually, at your nasty behavior to me. I've never been greeted so poorly in all my life. So we went round and round for another minute or two as I was attempting to salvage the situation, only to be returned with her frantic and out-of-control nonsensical comments. And that's when I said to Bob, come on, we are out of here. I'm not going to be treated like this. And this retired teacher, someone who you wouldn't expect would behave with such ignorance and rudeness, didn't seem to care less. Post-election frenzy? Seriously? My mind is still blown by that entire encounter. Could this supposed well-educated educator actually be so upset and confounded by the election results that she couldn't control her own behavior? I don't know. Who's teaching our kids? And we wonder why they behave so recklessly. Well, the rest of my week continued in that vein, with people who I consider to be rational, normal-functioning human beings, behaving with unkindness, rude, hurtful, and reckless behavior. So my point? I don't know. I'm still scratching my head at what we've become as a society. Well, now, certainly not everyone, of course, but it doesn't take many loudmouths to create a societal disturbance. All I can suggest is that those of us with the keen eye to notice this must do all we can to create some peace and harmony within our own little worlds. Maybe it'll catch on. And if not, at least we can have our own island, our own safe oasis in which to live and thrive. Because you don't need scientific studies to bear out the fact that when you are nasty, irritated, and unkind, it affects your health. Your behavior affects your bottom line. And I'm not talking about your financial bottom line, although I'm sure that comes into play too. Let's each of us, if not for the big picture, then selfishly, if that's what it takes, let each of us take the time this Thanksgiving and holiday season to make our little corner of the world a better place. Smile more often. Think positive thoughts. That's right. Feed your brain good things instead of negativity. Think before you speak or post on social media. Ask the question, is my comment worthy of helping to improve the situation, or does it feed into the void of stupidity? We may not all be winners at sports or at work or in school or with our desired election outcomes, but we can be winners in life, in our own lives. If everyone took care of their own little patch surrounding them, then we wouldn't have the crazy that is going on today. For your health, mental, and spiritual well-being, let's try, shall we? Well, I didn't mean to get off on that tangent, but since I did, I guess it was necessary. So let's move on to the rest of today's show, because right now, you know what time it is. It's time for the healthcare hazard of the week.
Drug-induced dementia. November is the National Alzheimer's Disease Awareness Month, and to recognize that, I want to talk about something we hear very little about, yet it is common and quite serious, and is due to the overzealous prescribing of drugs and also because of improper monitoring of medication use. Here's a typical scenario. Let's say a healthy person named Jim goes to the doctor for a checkup and is told his cholesterol is high. So Jim starts taking medication, which causes side effects. This leads his doctor to give him a second drug to treat those side effects. Then that second drug causes new side effects, so the doctor prescribes a third drug to treat the side effects of the second one. And before you know it, Jim's health is spiraling downward, and he soon needs assistance to live. And everyone just chalks it up to old age. Poor Jim has Alzheimer's. Now, this is important to note. Drug-induced dementia is different than age-induced dementia, and the odds of a drug-induced dementia increase the more medications a person takes. Here are a few reasons why an older patient might experience drug-induced dementia. Number one, many drugs are harmful to brain tissue, resulting in decreased brain function, exhibited by symptoms such as memory loss or other types of cognitive decline. Number two, as people age, they become more susceptible because the kidneys and liver, those organs responsible for clearing drugs from our system, can become impaired, and therefore they do not do the proper job, allowing the drugs to remain in our body longer than they should. Number three, as we age, we get thinner and more frail, making a normal dose for a 30-year-old way too much for a smaller body to handle. And finally, many older folks experience some level of dehydration, again, making it difficult to excrete these drugs from the body. I'd like to mention some known culprit drugs. A recent study listed 22 different categories of drugs that can cause symptoms that mimic Alzheimer's, plus 14 different over-the-counter drugs that also can cause these symptoms. Some problem drugs are tranquilizers, sleeping pills, sedatives, things like Ambien and Lunesta that we see advertised all over the TV, as well as narcotic pain relievers, prednisone that's used for allergies and asthma. Anesthesia can cause lingering confusion and brain fog, and even antibiotics such as Cipro and Levaquin. In fact, the side effects of those two antibiotics include irreversible damage to the central nervous system. Research shows that Cipro is highly concentrated in brain tissue. So what can you do? Because cognitive impairment caused by drugs is so frequently overlooked, it is important that when symptoms of confusion, altered concentration, or difficulty thinking occur, that you and your physician review any medications you are taking to determine if any of them might be the cause. Fortunately, if the cause is a medication, your symptoms should go away or become less severe after stopping the drug. And as a side note, do not stop these medications cold turkey. No pun intended. You need to wean from them slowly and not abruptly. Because seniors often see multiple doctors who may prescribe drugs without knowledge of current medications, it is important to at least use the same pharmacy chain. That way, all medications are in the computer system, and if a doctor prescribes a drug that may not play well with current drugs, the pharmacy system will flag it and your pharmacist can make you aware of it. I'd say get to know your pharmacist. And finally, drug-induced dementia is an important syndrome to recognize because in almost all cases, it can be reversed or returned to the pre-drug state by stopping the offending drug. With the holidays upon us, if you are visiting an older adult, take some time to review his or her drugs and be on the lookout for side effects that mimic more serious problems like dementia.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
The pharmaceutical industry is wreaking havoc on our health. Drugs promoted on TV and magazines. Drugs, drugs, drugs. I'm Pat Rulo, radio host of Speak Up and Stay Alive Patient Safety Radio with a new line of essential oils called Tiny Drops. Essential oils are powerful and concentrated plant essences, and just one tiny drop can have noticeable health benefits. No pills and no nasty side effects. Take charge of your health. Tiny drops, big results. Visit tinydropseo.com. After the show, be sure to visit the website speakupandstayalive.com for more life-saving information. Plus, that is where you can purchase my book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide. Bring the book to the hospital with you. It's the best way to stand out and in a positive way. And remember, we donate 2 handmade pillowcases to either a troop member or to a local veteran's shelter for every book sold with your name on it as the donor. So for a mere $20, you benefit, and so does some well-deserving warrior. And with the holidays around the corner, don't send the routine shirt that doesn't fit or a plastic gizmo or gadget. Give a meaningful and useful gift that really says, I care. Give the gift of healthcare safety. Purchase the book, The Patient Safety Logs. Hey, and throw in some icebreaker cards. It's a one-size-fits-all present that everyone needs. You can order online at speakupandstayalive.com or call me, 440-725-5462. You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. And if you know me, you know that I only bring you the best of the best when it comes to our guests. And today's guest has an especially important message about improving the quality of healthcare. Bonnie Cantor Berman was appointed director of the Ohio Department of Aging in January 2011. As director, she is helping to lead the state's efforts to transform healthcare and long-term care for its citizens. Director Cantor Berman has advocated for new approaches that emphasize quality, person-centered care while realizing cost savings. Her goals are to reform and enhance the quality and efficiency of our healthcare system and to strengthen long-term care options that give elders more choices about their care. Welcome to our show, Bonnie.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Bonnie, the phrase person-centered care is such an obvious, basic, and common sense way to treat people, yet at times it simply doesn't happen. And our show is all about improving our quality of care and healthcare outcomes. So will you explain to us what you mean by the words person-centered care?
I'd love to. Person-centered care is really the kind of care that each of us would want for ourselves or for a loved one. It's the kind of care that is based on relationship, self-determination, choice, and purposeful living. And you might say, that's kind of odd, we're talking about long-term care. That's really just the point, that when you are receiving care, whether it is in the home or whether it's in a nursing home or assisted living or anywhere in between, it is your home. The person receiving care is the boss. They are the ones that get to choose how it should be delivered, when it should be delivered, and just everything about their daily life. When I say person-centered care, it's not only about the person that's receiving the care, it's also about the person who's delivering the care. If we're going to truly have person-centered care, we have to do what I call flattening the hierarchy, which means you have to ensure that decision-making is placed in the hands of the person who is the closest to the resident or the consumer or the patient. If the person who's really doing the wonderful and very difficult duties every day, they know more about your loved one than anybody else. When we listen to what they have to say, we're catching things earlier. When we listen to what they have to say, their jobs are enhanced so that it's actually good business sense, because people who are enjoying their jobs are going to stay longer. So what we're able to measure, workforce retention, when you practice person-centered care, and sure enough, retention goes way up, so the cost of doing business goes down. What we know, Pat, is that person-centered care is good for the person who's receiving it, not just improving quality of life, but actually keeping them healthier. It's good for the staff because they're happier and more productive, and it's good business for the organization as well.
If you develop a relationship with someone and you almost feel like it's your mom or dad, of course you're not going to be so inclined to leave and go elsewhere, because now you have that relationship and you feel that you're doing some good for that other person.
Absolutely. So I'll use as an example, if somebody needs to have a bath and you don't know them well and you're not reacting to them in a way that makes sense to them, they may be argumentative and that may result in something that, I don't like the term, but I'll use it, behaviors. Mm-hmm. The kinds of things we say, there's something wrong with her. No, what's wrong is you don't know her. So actually, the work goes so much more smoothly, and it's just so much more gratifying when you know the person. The other way that makes person-centered care work, you really have to abide by a basic principle that's called consistent assignment. Oftentimes, in home care or in more of a institutional setting, you'll have staff that will rotate. If you stop and kind of scratch your head and you say, I wonder why they do that. If they have consistent assignment, which means it's the same caregivers for the same residents or individuals each day, relationships develop, they know what your patterns are, and they can very quickly know when something's wrong because they just have that sixth sense, just like we all do at home.
Sure, it's easier for them to take ownership of that resident's plans and to basically work with them as a team, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. It really is. They are a team. But it's interesting that you just said responsibility, because when you have person-centered care, you do delegate to the frontline or the direct care staff, but there also has to be accountability and responsibility. You can't have a culture of blame. You have to have a culture of empowerment, where people are willing to take risks and try something. They have to be willing to try new things, and if something doesn't go exactly right, they're not going to get in trouble for it immediately. If you think about nursing home care, and let's say a loved one has just gone in there, people used to expect a call, and someone would say, I'm the director of nursing, or I'm the social worker. I want to let you know that your mom is adjusting well. I don't want to hear that. What we want to hear is the phone rings, hi, I'm the social worker. I want to let you know that we are adjusting well to your mom.
Oh, I like that.
Isn't that great?
Yes.
And to be able then to say, and this is what we're doing because we understand that she likes to have tea in bed before breakfast, so we now bring it to her. Those are the kinds of things that we're looking to hear. And we actually even have checklists for families, the kinds of questions to ask so that you know you're getting this kind of care.
And that was going to be my next question to you, that consumers of care in any setting should expect excellence. Can you empower our listeners with any additional insights and questions that they can and should be asking, whether it is the patient or a close family member who's overseeing that patient's care?
Well, I think the first thing that you just said is the key to it, and that is to expect excellence. And somehow we have this idea that we can just accept mediocrity. And what we're doing in Ohio is we are raising the bar on quality so that everyone has the right to expect the highest quality for their loved ones. And so your question is, what are the kinds of things that consumers or their loved ones should look for? I'll just give you a couple of examples that may surprise some of your listeners. A question such as, will my loved one be awakened at a set time in the morning, or will she have a choice? I give you that question because I don't think most people think that they should have a choice about when they get up in the morning. In a nursing home, as an example. Believe it or not, the federal regulations, as well as our state mandates, say, of course you should have a choice and you should be getting up when you want to get up. That's just one example of how we think about choice. You should be able to have choice of when you get up, when you go to bed, what you eat, when you bathe, how you bathe. You should be listening for answers such as, well, residents may choose to sleep as long as they want without being awakened. These are the kinds of answers you should be looking for. Can my loved one be given a bath or shower when he or she chooses? Should listen for things like, yes, we can accommodate a person's lifelong patterns. Plus, we understand the special needs of someone with dementia. So we have many creative ways to keep people clean so we can adapt to their preferences and still maintain cleanliness. These are the kinds of answers that you should be listening for. But most important is to even think of asking these kinds mm-hmm. of questions.
People don't realize they have the rights. My mom was in a rehabilitation facility, and they mm-hmm. used to wake her up at 3 o'clock in the morning to give her a bath. And I heard of other folks that were having the same situation, so I felt empowered enough to say, this is not right. My mother never took a bath at 3 o'clock in the morning. We're not going to be doing it here. But so many other families didn't even know that they had that voice, that they were able to say that. So it's good to hear you reinforcing that for us.
I'm glad you were able to intervene, but so many people don't think about mm-hmm. it. And if they rely on their loved one to report it or to say, if you say, Mom, is everything okay? The answer is most likely going to be yes, dear,
right.
Because they don't want to cause trouble. This is a generation that might want to please people, might be fearful of retribution. And so what we want to do is also let residents know you have rights. You have the ability to be at home wherever you are. I mentioned earlier things like choice in dining and choice in bathing, but one that's most important to me is eliminating overhead paging.
Mm.
And the way I describe that to people is, do you have overhead paging in your home? And I say, no, only when my husband yells at me from the downstairs to get him something. And we say, well, this is the elders and other folks who are in nursing homes. It's their home, and there are other ways to communicate. You were talking about your mom being awakened at 3 a.m. for a bath. What about all the times that you hear this overhead page? So that's a quality incentive that people may not think about. Others include our satisfaction scores. We have clinical indicators such as the rate of pressure ulcers, the rate of pain, the rate of restraints. So we're very excited to be able to incentivize our nursing homes in our state to provide the kind of care and caring that all of your listeners and all of their families deserve.
Well, I applaud you for that. This is good news. What if a patient or a family member experiences a level of care that is less than acceptable? Is there a reporting location? What are their alternatives?
We have in Ohio an incredibly robust, just incredible ombudsman program. And if you call our ombudsman program with a problem, they will investigate, they will help you out in any way. If someone goes to www.aging.ohio.gov, they will find a link to our ombudsman program. Even if someone just goes to that site and calls the Ohio Department of Aging, we are there to serve. So we will make sure that the right person gets the complaint. And of course, we always love to hear good things as well.
And Bonnie, do you have any final words of advice for our listeners today?
My final word of advice is to think of older adults, not as seniors, but as our elders. And our elders who have built this great state, built our families, built our communities, and they are individuals that are still contributing, thriving, and deserving of so much. And so it's a word we'd love if people started using more so that it really connotes the kind of respect that we have for them.
Well, thank you, Bonnie, for sharing some exciting ideas and resources with us today. And, you know, with the holidays upon us, many of us will be spending time with our elders, family, and friends, making it the perfect time, I think, to assess that person's situation and think in terms of person-centered care. And I hope our listeners can use your resources to help them move their loved one's life in that positive direction. And I so appreciate your being with us to share this information today.
Thank you for having me.
You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Coming up, emails, some Thanksgiving humor, and of course, everyone's favorite game, Fear the Wheelchair. You don't want to miss that.
Here's your Speak Up and Stay Alive Oh moment with Pat Rulo, your healthcare navigation hostess, serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit.
To avoid dangerous drug reactions, you have to take charge. Here's a little known resource, your pharmacist. A pharmacist is trained in all things drug related. And here's a smart idea, get all of your medications from the same pharmacy. Why? Because that way your record is in one central location. Many of us see several doctors, and each doctor may prescribe a medication that unknowingly might conflict with current prescriptions. When all prescriptions are filled at the same pharmacy, the pharmacy's computer system will flag any potential unsafe interactions, and your pharmacist can question it and bring it to your attention. If, however, you use multiple pharmacies, there will be no continuity of care. So stay out of harm's way. Make friends with your favorite pharmacist.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, with a show stuffed with more goodies than your Thanksgiving turkey. Well, that must mean that it's time for the most requested radio game show of all times.
Fear the Wheelchair.
Well, by now you know that a hospital wheelchair is a high-touch, highly contaminated vehicle that seldom gets cleaned, making it capable of spreading infections all over the place. So the wheelchair is now this show's representation of all hospital dangers, kind of like our mascot. So here we go, once again, with everyone's favorite game.
Fear the Wheelchair.
Listen, as Joe reads some right or wrong statements, then even though I can't hear you, shout out your answers along with Bob. Is the statement right? Or is it wrong? Whoa. All right, Joe.
All right, here we go. Right or wrong, person-centered care requires lots of forms and paperwork.
What do you think, Bob?
I think that's right.
You think that? Okay. That's wrong.
Oh.
That's wrong.
Yeah. Person-centered care requires lots of forms and paperwork. That is wrong. Person-centered care is a relationship-based approach to care that honors and respects the voice of elders and those working closest with them, aimed at putting care back in the word healthcare. Guess what, guys? It costs nothing to be empathetic and kind. And are you doing this to me on purpose?
No.
Are these correct?
I don't know if you're correct or not. Here we go again. We cannot seem to get this right, no matter what, even the turkeys.
Okay.
All right. How about the next one, Joe?
All right. Right or wrong, research shows that the antibiotic Cipro is highly concentrated in brain fluid.
Do you have some Cipro in your brain fluid, Joe?
Yes.
Yeah. Bob, is Cipro highly concentrated in brain fluid?
That's wrong.
Do you agree, Joe?
Sure.
Bob is wrong. Oh, Lepro is an antibiotic that does concentrate in brain fluid, which can then cause side effects that may mimic dementia. Be on the lookout for medication side effects, no matter what you're taking.
Right or wrong, sharing hairbrushes and razors is okay as long as the other person is a family member.
What do you think, Bob?
I'm going to say right, but who knows?
What do you think, Joe?
I still haven't gotten a haircut since the last show.
You didn't get a haircut?
No.
Are you serious?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because of my MRSA show I did?
That's right.
All right, so sharing hairbrushes and razors. Is it okay? What do we say?
I said right.
Okay. It is not okay. Many people silently carry staph bacteria on their skin without a problem. But when you share hairbrushes and razors, you can easily transfer that bacteria to your skin. So, Bob, stay away from my stuff.
Okay.
All right.
Right or wrong, alcohol is highly flammable and volatile.
What do you think, Bob?
Oh, that's right.
Joe?
That's right.
That is right. Yay, we got one right. And we talked about this when we discussed surgical fires. During a hospital stay, your doctor or nurse will use alcohol wipes to disinfect your skin prior to a procedure. However, it's extremely important that the alcohol dries completely before introducing anything hot or that might cause a spark. So prior to any surgical procedure, ask your doctor about the potential for a surgical fire.
All right, right or wrong, using different pharmacy chains is a good idea. It's a great way to get first-time discounts.
What do you think, Bobby?
Oh, that's definitely wrong.
Joe?
Oh, it's wrong.
It is wrong.
You had turkey. That's all I can tell you. It's, oh, we're right? Wait. Okay. I'll take that. Then.
We need a turkey there.
We do need a turkey.
Yeah.
All right.
Do you guys know why that is wrong? Why you shouldn't use a different pharmacy chain? When you do use the same pharmacy chain or the same pharmacy, if a newly prescribed medication interacts negatively with a current medicine, the pharmacy computer system will red flag it and bring it to the pharmacist's attention. And he or she will notify you. It's a great checks and balances system that doesn't cost anything, unlike the checks and balance system that we have going on here. Any more, Joe?
Yeah, hopefully this is the last one. Right or wrong, sanitizing is the same as disinfecting.
What do you think, Bobby?
No, I'm going to say right.
Joe?
Sure.
Sure, he says. It's wrong. Sanitizing and disinfecting is not the same thing. Sanitizing a surface reduces the soil and it removes some of the microbes, making it easier for the disinfectant to do its job. The guiding principle is always remove germs if possible rather than kill them because you want to use the least toxic product that will do the job. In fact, a high-quality microfiber cloth can even remove large quantities of microbes, including hard-to-kill spores. We probably should go into the microfiber cloth business. What do you guys think?
Sure.
All right, I'll have to look into that. Remember, the more you know, the safer you'll be. And you heard about it here on Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Well, thank you guys for playing the ever crazy game and yet everyone's favorite game of...
Fear the Wheelchair, the Turkey Edition.
The Turkey Edition. You are... Which one of us is a turkey?
You're
listening. You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I am Pat Rulo, where the boys and I attempt to keep you safe during any healthcare or hospital encounter. Coming up, more of what you've come to expect, tips and tools to help you survive any healthcare or hospital encounter. Stay in your seat. Did you know that over 70 hospitals nationwide are using essential oils to fight germs, improve mood, and reduce stress? I'm Pat Rulo, radio host of Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, with a new line of essential oils called Tiny Drops. Now you too can have access to these amazing natural health options. For example, you can use lavender to reduce stress, sweet orange to improve your mood, peppermint to improve focus and energy and alleviate those headaches. Tiny Drops, big results. Visit tinydropseo.com. You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I am Pat Rulo, your hostess and author of the book Speak Up and Stay Alive, the Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide, available only at our website, speakupandstayalive.com.
Because it is the holiday season, many of us travel to visit loved ones. And this makes me think about our healthcare safety when it comes to air travel. So I thought I'd share my top tips in this week's O Moment. Here they are. Do not fly soon after surgery. The change in atmospheric pressure may impede the healing process. Try not to travel if you have a head cold or sinus infection. The cabin pressure can make the symptoms worse. Keep all medications with you on board and always bring a summary of your medical history with you. If something should happen in flight, having a list of allergies, medications, and doctor phone numbers and emergency contact numbers could prove invaluable. And be aware of something called deep vein thrombosis. It is a blood clot in a deep vein, commonly in the legs, and it's life-threatening because a piece of the clot can break off and travel to the lungs where it can cause a pulmonary embolism, and that's a blockage of the main artery to the lungs. Studies suggest that the risk of deep vein thrombosis may double after 4 hours of flying. The main cause appears to be prolonged immobility, so there's also that same risk if you sit for long periods on a car or train or bus journey, or even at home or in the office. Wear comfortable soft shoes that you could slip on and off so that your feet do not swell during the flight. And also wear loose and comfortable fitting clothing, avoid tight belts and waistbands, and leave your seat every hour and walk up and down the aisle. And when you're in your seat, do ankle and foot exercises and try to move your legs as much as possible. Think twice about reserving those exit row seats because sometimes the advantage of that extra leg room is outweighed by armrests that do not raise and seats that don't recline, making it difficult to get comfortable. The same goes for the last row. The seats may not recline, and if they are near the toilets, you could be in trouble by noise and smell. Stretch your arms and your head and your back and your neck. Not only will this help keep the blood flowing, but it will alleviate the cramping and the pains that come from sitting for an extended period of time. And because the air is so dry when you fly, do not drink alcohol. Drink lots of water to avoid headaches. Pass on the ice cubes and drink only bottled water. I've heard nasty stories about the quality of airplane ice cubes. Plus, the source of drinking water on planes is usually the municipal water supply of the airport where the water is boarded. Water is loaded into aircraft tanks via pipes and hoses from public water sources or from water tanker trucks, which suggests to me the potential for microbial pathogens. And airline food, it's too sugary, salty, and basically unhealthy. Bring your own healthy snacks and load up on vitamins a few weeks before you travel and before you board. Fresh air is a foreign concept on long flights, and you may be susceptible to airborne infections or disease. And with that in mind, pack a baggie of bleach wipes and hand sanitizer. Wipe down your seat, the seatbelt, front magazine pocket, and especially the tray table. Remember what we learned a few weeks ago. MRSA, a staph bacteria, was found on 40% of airplane tray tables. After disinfecting, toss the wipes and use the hand sanitizer to clean your hands. Well, those are just a few of my top tips for safe flying. They're not hard to do. This way, you'll arrive at your destination ready for all the fun and fabulousness the holidays have to offer.
Well, this week, I started to think about some of the things that make me feel lighter and thankful. Sure, I came up with the usual: family, friends, food, shelter, health. But those go without saying. But what about the less recognized parts of my day and life? So let me pose this question to you. How often do you pause to appreciate what you have in life? And not just the typical, but the seemingly silly, the non-noticed happenings, the little things that, when you stop to think about them, really make you feel good, feel gratitude, feel thankful. Well, for this pre-Thanksgiving show, I thought I'd share some of mine. And mind you, some may be quite unconventional. Here are a few, and I'll begin with family, especially if they like me. If not, then not so thankful. I'm thankful for my mom, and you should be too, because without her, this program would not exist. And actually, neither would I. Thanks, Mom. I'm thankful for my immune system, for fighting the nasties that enter my body that struggles against too much cell phone radiation from secondhand phone, from the chemicals sprayed via chemtrail planes, from genetically modified foods, and who so far has not let me down. I'm thankful for a brain that allows me to think and process and discover, and that continually warns me not to be a follower, but to find my own answers and own my own truth. I'm happy for my home, my absolute favorite place to be. And oddly sounding, I'm happy and thankful for mistakes. They teach me in a most harsh way what to not do ever again. I'm always thankful for the birds on my bird feeder, and I apologize for not always keeping it as full as I should. I'm thankful for the sun. Being a Leo, the sun has always made me feel good. I'm thankful for $1 child chocolate cones at Dairy Queen. I just love it when Bob looks at me after dinner and says, "Dairy Queen?" No matter what I'm wearing or what I look like, I'm in the car like a kid. I do love sprinkles too, but then there's two problems. One, they get all over the place and you eventually find yourself wearing black, heading off to a speaking event, sitting on pink and blue sprinkles days later. And worse, when I see that open container of sprinkles through the drive-thru window, I wonder about flies, dust, lack of hygiene. So I usually pass. I'm thankful for words, whether written or spoken. Ever since my go-around in high school with Latin class and the teacher who looked just like Julius Caesar, I so appreciate words, their origin, meanings, and the gift some people have to combine seemingly mismatched words to evoke the perfect picture. I'm thankful for little cats who trust me enough to sit on my lap, and I have 11 of them who furnish that opportunity. I'm thankful for the off button on my phone and the ability to connect to the internet without using Wi-Fi. Heaven help us in our health if we couldn't just disconnect from technology and the massive amounts of radiation they emit that negatively affect our health. I say hail to the off button. I'm thankful that I am not a cow. Yes, I mean a beautiful bovine. I've always been concerned that I might someday live life as a cow, and I just can't imagine living with all of those darn flies swarming my tail. Pizza, pasta, oh heck, all Italian food in general. It's just plain good, and it's part of who I am. For lilacs, I'm thankful for lilacs. I grew up with old and prolific lilac bushes that lined the entire back of our garage. And the childhood memories come back each year when I see or smell a lovely purple lilac. The spring before my dad died of colon cancer, he picked me a bouquet of lilacs from his yard and presented them to me. This now malnourished, chemotherapied shell of a man, tiny and frail, handed them to me, and we both knew what a grand and special gift it was. I'm thankful for pillows, especially decorative ones. Now, I don't have a lot of them, but I'd really like to. But then I wonder, what will I do with all of those pretty pillows? Although I did see somewhere that someone had a pillow room with nothing in the room but pillows. Now, that would be cool. Potato chips. I admit, I simply can't eat one, or two, or even 20. My pink kayak. I love that it's pink. And I love the river behind my house that affords me immediate peace, tranquility, and zen. And I'm thankful for paint samples. You know, the paper strips of color swatches that you find in the paint department of a hardware store. Love them. And hardware stores. I guess I should add them to the list. So many unusual gizmos, gadgets, and things I have absolutely no idea what purpose they serve. And speaking of stores, bookstores. Say what? Who even knows what that is anymore? I actually have to purposely stay out of bookstores as I can't resist buying lots and lots of books. What about trash collectors? I bet you never thought about that one, did you? Each week, like magic, our trash disappears. Just imagine this Thanksgiving if we didn't have trash collectors. What in the world would we do with that greasy turkey carcass, gravy-covered leftovers, cranberry-infested paper towels? And what about the gift of voice? I appreciate that all of the time, especially as a radio host. How wonderful is it to have the apparatus to put my thoughts out there? And finally, I'm thankful for you. You, who visit my website, read my book, and listen to this radio program. People like you, who take matters seriously, who want to learn and grow, who are motivated and inspired, who share what I say with others. I am always humbled by you and grateful to be able to reach out to you. You know, there is a difference between being thankful for something and being a thankful and grateful person. In today's world, with so much ugly, frightening, horrific acts of violence and anger, one of the things we can do to help is to look for the simple, safe, daily happenings and be thankful for them. Perhaps that's a start to becoming a truly thankful and grateful person. And if this catches on, maybe, just maybe, we can retrain society to take it easy, find the off button, pet a cat, feed a bird, hug a trash collector, fill a room with pillows and paint samples. I don't know. It's worth a try. So what have I missed? What can we add to build our collective thankfulness? If you have special items on your thankful list, let me know. Send me an email or leave me a voice message. Reach out to me at pat@speakupandstayalive.com, pat@speakupandstayalive.com, or call me at 440-725-5462, 440-725-5462. This Thanksgiving, instead of cell phones on the dinner table, turn them off, put them away, and share your thankful list with those around you. What makes your unconventional list? Is anyone at your table thankful for the smell of crayons? Happy Thanksgiving from me to you.
Well, today I shared some ideas about drug-induced dementia. Always know the side effects of your medication. And our guest, Bonnie Cantor-Berman, talked about patient-centered care. And I mentioned several times today that I think the holidays are the perfect time to stop and spend some quality time with your older loved ones and assess their medications, their legal needs, and their living needs. And be sure to listen next week when we continue to bring you all the vital healthcare safety news you've come to expect. And tell all of your family and friends to tune in. And you know, you can always listen online via the internet from wherever you're visiting. I am Pat Rulo. That's me, your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.